Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey. Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
What's going on, everybody? Jared Sandler here for another episode of the Just a Sec Conversation. It's episode 68 with the great Dane Brugler. Dane, as I'm sure you're familiar, if you're an NFL fan, one of the foremost authorities on the NFL draft. He's got a really unique story, how he got to where he is without any playing background of note, to become one of the most respected authorities in player analysis. It's really, really impressive. I'm excited for you to get to hear Dane share his story. As always, would really appreciate if you would subscribe to the channel. Just share this link. I know it might not seem like much, but just clicking the subscribe button or passing off this interview to a few friends who you think might be interested really does go a long way in supporting the project, and I really would appreciate it. Without further ado, though, let's get to episode 68 of the Just a Sec Conversation with Dane Brugler.
All right, Dane, the first question I like to ask people, what do you recall or what stands out about your childhood?
Wow. I'm the oldest of eight, so a lot of siblings. That's what I recalled most. I mean, I grew up in a big family. My parents are, hardworking Catholics who wanted to have a big family, and I was the oldest. So it was me and then, four sisters, and then until my brother. So I grew up with a lot of sisters, and it was, it was something that was enjoyable for, to always have someone around to play with and things like that. But, it's also when you're a 10-year-old boy, having a lot of sisters is not exactly something that you're excited about. So I think that probably what stands out the most is just having always a big family, which has its pros and cons. I think I appreciate it a lot more now, when we get all together for, Christmas or holidays or, whatever, or vacation, things like that. It's a lot of fun because there's a lot of people and, it's definitely appreciate it more now, more so than, 20, 25 years ago. But nonetheless, my family growing up in a big house like that definitely was what I would be my first thought.
Okay, so a few questions on that. Do you remember any games that, like, you would play with your siblings? Like, you guys are just kind of hanging around. Hey, let's play this game. Or, like, what were, like, the sibling activities?
A lot of outside stuff. I mean, we always played outside. So whether it's basketball or kickball or whatever, I mean, we always did that. Swimming in the summer. A lot of that, a lot of board games, a lot of competitive stuff. We were always playing something. I think my sister will still remind me to this day, the day she beat me at, 21 or two bounce or one of those games. And it's something that, I wouldn't be surprised if you put it on a resume.
Christmas now with like the siblings and nieces and nephews, and you got, your own family. I mean, is that like the most expensive time of the year for you? Like that's always been my fear. I think like growing up with brothers and sisters, like I had two older brothers, but they were 10 and 12 years older. So I didn't like grow up with them in the same way that you might with a brother or a sister who's like 2-3 years, within your age. But like my fear is that, okay, now like brother Steve and sister Bonnie each have like five of their own kids. And then the other siblings have like two or three, like, I mean, how do you have to get like a present for every niece and nephew and every brother and sister?
Well, what we do is we do a kind of a gift exchange where we each pick a name out of a hat. And so we're only getting one gift for all the siblings, and you know, it works out well. And I only have one, cause I have two kids myself. And then, like I said, I'm the oldest, so I have a lot of younger siblings. My youngest sibling is a sophomore in high school. So there's, you know, a pretty wide gap there.
So no kids for that sibling yet.
Right. Yes. hopefully it's like 10 more years for her, but, I only have one niece, the next oldest in my family. She has a daughter, and I don't have to worry about that quite yet, but I tell you, I think maybe the coolest part about it now is we're all in different spots. Like I was in Texas, now I'm back in Ohio where, my parents are and where we grew up. But the next sister, Kelsey, she works for Disney in Orlando, and is moving up through the company there. The next sister, Erin, is a river guide at the Grand Canyon, a really cool off the wall type of job that she really loves. The next one, Claire, used to be a plant manager at Ben and Jerry's. Now she is a manager at Kroger. And you know, and then after that, Meredith, she's a chef. And next one, Seth, who just graduated from Ohio State. Now he works for GM. And then Haley is at Cleveland State. She's a sophomore. And then Faith, who's a sophomore in high school. So there's just so many different things. I mean, my parents, I don't know how their heads don't explode trying to keep up with everything, everything going on in each one of our lives. But it's definitely cool to see the different tracks each one of us has taken throughout our lives, and that's only going to continue.
So last thing on that, as I mentioned, I had two older brothers, and I'm married, no kids yet, hopefully, God willing, in the future. Mm-hmm. But like, my wife's an only child, and she, because of that, doesn't want only one kid. If we're fortunate enough to have kids, like, she doesn't want our firstborn to be our, to be an only child. And then I don't mind the big age gap. I don't know that the 10 and 12 years, but I know that I benefited so much from having brothers who were, older enough to they really could guide me. Like, when you're 2 years older, there are things you can help with, but from the start, they were helping me, giving me advice, whether I listened or not. I guess we're all influenced by maybe our own upbringing. You mentioned, I know you have two little ones. Was there ever a thought I loved having, as many siblings as I did, I'd like to have that? Or did that push you in a different direction? I absolutely don't want to have eight kids. Did that influence your thought at all? And I also know, in asking this, it's not easy to have eight kids. That's not something you just randomly decide, but I didn't know how that maybe influenced your idea of building a family.
Yeah. I think it definitely influenced, our decision to not have that many kids, because it's hard, because you have, obviously financially it's tough. And then, there's just only so many hours in a day, and, you have career aspirations, you have to have time for, your marriage, you have to have time for yourself, and to try and fit in eight kids like that, it's tough. Now, my parents, that's what they chose to do, and that's something that I don't think they have any regrets about that. For me and my wife, that's just, not for us, but I just think just the sense of family that my parents instilled in all of us is definitely something that I bring to my family now that I'm a dad, and I have a 5 and a 3-year-old, and we talked about maybe a third, and but it won't be any more than that. I don't know how, just having eight kids in this day and age just seems like a venture I'm not ready to even try or attempt.
I would find that those parents would be quite brave. I'm sure your parents certainly are.
Brave or crazy, I'm not sure which one.
All right, so when did football come into the picture for you? And what do you remember about your introduction to football?
Well, I was a big baseball guy. That was my first love. You know, growing up in Northeast Ohio, just when the Indians were getting good in the early 90s, that was my first introduction to sports. And that was right around the same time with the Browns. They got booted from Cleveland, went to Baltimore, became the Ravens. And then I was always a big college football fan. You know, growing up in Ohio, you know, watching Ohio State beat Arizona State in the Rose Bowl in 97, things like that as a young kid. But then when the Browns came back in 99, that's what really piqued my interest, specifically to the draft. You know, just trying to you have this situation where, okay, well, how do you decide who's better, Tim Couch or Ricky Williams or Donovan McNabb or all these different players? What makes a good college player a great NFL player or vice versa? And it's just a really interesting dynamic that really triggered something in my mind. And ever since 99, when I was, 12 years old, I've just been enamored with NFL scouting, the evaluation process, and everything that's involved with it. And so ever since then, I've knew that was what I wanted to do with my life. I knew I wanted to be in sports somehow, some way. There was just nothing else in my life I wanted to do. And whether it was baseball or football, and then as soon as I started finding this love for the draft, and I knew that's where I wanted to take my career.
Okay, so the first time you wrote a draft guide was when you were 18. Am I correct in that? Okay.
Yeah. My dorm room, my freshman year at Mount Union College.
Okay. And I know that your time at Mount Union, we'll get into that. I know that was obviously really influential, and there was an individual who certainly was influential in that regard. But what do you remember about that first draft guide and how you went about it? And I don't know, when you think back to that, like whether you laugh about certain things or you're like, man, like I was spot on with this, or I don't know. Like, what are the things you think about?
Well, I liked Aaron Rodgers over Alex Smith in that draft, so I'll cling to that. You know, I remember, being in my dorm room and just, I don't know. Like, I had no idea what I was doing, but I knew that I just loved it. And, you know, it just, at that point in time, I'm only watching games on TV. And in, this is what, 2004, 2005, around then, you know, there's only so many games on TV, and it's not like the options that we have now, and you know, with all the streaming options and you know, things you can find online. It's so you're just whatever you have access to is what you're watching, and so obviously that shaped you know, how I was putting things together. And my biggest thing when doing a draft guide or you know, putting together something like that, writing an article, is I want to write something that me as a draft fan that I would love to read. And so that's my goal, is I want to write something that as a draft fan that I would really want to get my hands on and digest and fully understand. And so that's, you know, that's what I do with my draft guides every year since then, is just try to make one step better each year to you know, really encapsulate what I want to know about each player and just the whole point I'm trying to get across.
All right, so Mount Union, Dane. Mm-hmm. You go there. I mean, they, I don't know whether people realize this or not. Football fans probably certainly do, but maybe the casual athletic fan doesn't realize that while Mount Union might not be competing for, you know, national titles at the, you know, the top level, I mean, they are a powerhouse of their own. What was the football program like when you were there? I know that Pierre Garçon was there, mm-hmm. who obviously went on to have a really nice NFL career, but was Mount Union a powerhouse during your time there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were a powerhouse since the early 90s. You know, they had more national titles than games lost for, like, in a 30-year span, which just tells you something about just the program and Larry Karras, who was the head coach and then the AD. It's just it's really, really interesting dynamic, because at the Division III level, you don't have athletic scholarships. And so, obviously, there's ways around that, but to build something at the Division III level like that is so impressive. Obviously, Ohio is a football hotbed of talent. I mean, high school football in Ohio, you know, it's probably not quite on the same level as Texas, but it's close, and it's right up there with Georgia and a lot of these other states that are producing high-end talent going to the college level. So, there are a lot of players that I'm sure, you could go Division II or maybe even FCS school and, play at a higher level. Or you can come to Division III, and in your 4 years, you're almost guaranteed to win at least one national title for Mount Union. So, and I was blessed to, now I didn't play for Mount Union, but I worked for the football team. And so I was around the program every day seeing, just how impressive an operation it was. And I was lucky, like you mentioned, Pierre Garçon, he and I were seniors together. So we had NFL scouts coming through Alliance every single week, whether it's for practice or for a game. And, it was an outstanding opportunity for me to get to know different scouts, to network, to learn. And that's why I went to Mount Union, is because, I knew I wanted to be part of work in sports and be part of the evaluation process. But I mean, how do you do that? What do you do? And so the only thing I can come up with was I'm just going to put myself in as many situations to learn and grow and get better. And, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, I can say I did my best. And so going to Mount Union certainly helped, because that's how I was able to get in touch and start this network of scouts and guys, buddies in the league. And not only just the networking part, but what they taught me and becoming a better evaluator and understanding when I'm watching film, what I'm looking at and what I'm looking for and the important traits at each position and things like that. So definitely an invaluable experience.
Who are some of the scouts that, when you look back to those days, were incredibly influential?
A lot of them, Kreider with the Steelers, he was a guy that I met in Alliance in the press box, just kind of, talking ball at first. Cio Brocato has been a guy who unfortunately has passed away, but he was one of the legends of scouting, actually an Arlington native. And he's a legend, with the Oilers for a long time, then the Titans. And he was someone who, as he was getting older and older, he had me, take him to pro days, really help him along those lines. And that was something that was being able to shadow him, was just an invaluable experience that I can't even put into words what that meant for me in my career and how I was able to grow from those experiences. And so, it's an informal education, but one that I would not be here today without that.
All right, Dane. So another person I know is influential, and apologize if I'm not pronouncing his name properly, but the SID of the football program, Michael, is it Matthias?
Yep, Matthias. Yep.
Matthias. Okay. So the sports information director, for people who might not be as familiar, this is the person, or usually it can be a group. They are the media relations types, they're in the communication, different titles, different places. But in college, for whatever reason, they're all called sports information directors, and they're the liaison between that program or the department and the media. And they do some other things, that's probably just a generalization. But for someone who has maybe followed your path, and I guess you have taken a media angle to it, but the basis of what you are, who you are, is you're a scout. How and why was he so influential?
Well, and so for me, I knew I wanted to scout and evaluate, but I was also realistic, and I knew I couldn't put, all my eggs in that basket and just say, well, it's this or nothing. So my goal was to get involved with sports communication, and then on the side, keep working on my scouting and keep trying to make a career out of it. And so working for DeMatteis was perfect, because I was close to the football program. I was working with the SID department. So, I'm, writing post-game stories and doing all this stuff while I'm still working with the football team and dealing with scouts and the team and things like that. So it was an easy crossover to make. And just everything he taught me, from specifics about the job to, life in general, was something that was a huge role model for my life, and someone that was very influential. And that helped me, because my first job after I left Mount Union was I was the PR guy for the Frisco Rough Riders, the double-A team of the Rangers in Frisco. And that was the perfect first job. And everything that I learned from Mount Union, from Dean Mateus, that's what I took to Frisco. And it's something that it was able to shape who I was. And then I've taken a lot of those things over to scouting. And so definitely something that I probably learned more out of the classroom than in the classroom from my time at Mount. Dean Mateus is a big part of that.
All right, last two questions involving Mount Union. They're both regarding Pierre Garçon. When you were watching him, Did you know, like, from your scouting eye and brain, like, this is a guy who is going to succeed in the NFL? And then I'm also just kind of curious what your relationship was with him. I know you're same senior class, but did you and do you still have any kind of a relationship?
That's the hardest part about small school scouting is you're watching this guy who's clearly talented. And he's burning these D3 corners, but all the competition that he's facing are guys that are going to be accountants or dentists in a few months. Like, they're not NFL level guys, or even guys that'll sniff the NFL. So it's tough to really gauge what you're looking at. He's talented, but just how talented is he? Is he still going to be this productive if you were playing at Ohio State? Or even at the FCS level, if he was at Youngstown State, would he still be doing this? And at that time, I was sold. I thought he was, just watching him day in, day out, practice and games, I thought he was the real deal. And I thought just, getting to know him, because I wouldn't call us friends, but working with scouts, working with the team, I was around him every day. So, we were on a first name basis, and, we talked quite a bit, every other day or so. And so I knew enough about him to know that he had a professional mentality about him. He understood the opportunities that were in front of him. So I thought had the character that was needed, the work ethic that was needed to be a player. And, he was able to get drafted by the Colts, and then, played a few spots after that and signed some big contracts. And so I haven't talked to Pierre in probably, I talked to him a few times in the last maybe 10 years. Like I said, we weren't friends, but just, close enough where, if I saw him walking down the street, we'd probably stop and talk for 30 minutes and catch up. And then, that would be it. Maybe bump into each other in another decade from now. So really, really good guy. And it's a really talented player who kind of fell through the cracks. He was from Florida and, just fell through the cracks. And, part of it was of his own doing, but he realized the opportunity that he had at Mount Union, and he took it and ran with it.
All right, so I'm curious, there's this stigma in sports that if you didn't play or you didn't play at a certain level, you're not qualified to say this or know that. And I think it's starting to erode, thankfully, because there are some super smart people who know the game or know, whatever game it might be, better than, frankly, people who played at a really high level, or at least they're better at communicating it. Did you find any challenges from a scouting standpoint, gaining respect, gaining traction as someone who didn't play football, at a high level?
Yeah, that's certainly out there. And like you said, I think it's starting to wane a little bit, from a credibility standpoint. And then, it's funny, because I think if you're, we see it, in the media all the time with analysts and things like that. If you're a former player, you have instant credibility, even though you might have no idea what you're talking about, and being able to explain your point and, really describe what's happening on the field in a way that listeners are going to be able to comprehend and understand what you're saying. So it's something that, I've interviewed with a lot of teams, because my goal was always to be with an NFL team, not necessarily be in the media. And I've gone to some interviews where they were very skeptical about my background, being not playing at the college level and not being a professional former player and things like that. when other teams have been more open to it, and they like that. They think it's refreshing because, you know, it's more of a fresh mind where I wasn't coached to think a certain way with the game, since the time, or, you know, in high school and college and things like that. I was a little more open-minded at things. And so I wasn't brainwashed to think a certain way. So I think it goes both ways. And it's something that one thing that I've learned above all is just you have to be open-minded because, the game is constantly evolving. And, it's something that, every level doesn't matter, high school, college, NFL, the game's constantly changing as you're trying to find, vulnerabilities in your opponent and ways to get better. And so, as long as you're evolving with the game and understanding, where everything's headed, I think you're in a good spot.
You mentioned interviewing with NFL teams. I know that, we've talked about this before and, whether you'd admit it or not, I know you've had opportunities. What has ultimately kept you down the media path, especially since, you mentioned a second ago that you at one point your goal, maybe your foremost goal was to go the team route. So what's been the thought process there and why have you not, is that something that you would still maybe consider?
Yeah, it's been something that, I've been in situations where I turned down job opportunities with the team just because the situation wasn't right. And there have been other times where I've interviewed and was ready to take the job and run with it, and they didn't offer it to me. And so I was heartbroken about it. So for whatever reason, it hasn't worked out. And maybe 5 years ago, the last time I turned down a job was with the Chiefs back in 2015, and I went to KC, John Dorsey, Chris Ballard, room of scouts interviewed. They went really well. They said, we want to hire you and need you to be here by training camp. And this was 2015, and my son, my firstborn, was due at the end of July. And it was one of those things where it killed me to turn it down, this opportunity, but I couldn't do that to my wife. I couldn't do that, uproot our life and move to KC the way things were going. It wasn't the right time. And so I turned it down, and, it was a situation where I have no regrets about it. And, the situation is what it is. And once that I started growing my family, I kind of embraced the media side because I don't have to be on the road 200 days out of the year. I get a chance to do most of my work out of my home office where I'm watching film and working the phone, things like that. And I still have plenty of business trips and road trips going on the road to see these guys in person, but not nearly as much if I was working for a team. So because of that, and because I've got a outstanding platform at The Athletic where they invest in me and give me the opportunity to really go after my passion every single day, I've embraced the media side of things, and I have no problem if that's what I do the rest of my life. Now, I'll always listen, when I talk with teams and things like that. If the right situation comes up in the future, you never know. I'll never say never, but I'm very, very happy and comfortable with where I'm at right now.
All right. You said something, I read this, that I love, and scouting is so subjective, and you can, some of the brightest minds still miss on some of the, the guys who become the best players. I mean, people missed, I'm sure, to varying degrees on Patrick Mahomes. And you mentioned Alex Smith over Aaron Rodgers. It is so difficult. If there was a perfect way to do it, then I guess there wouldn't really be as much of a separation between good scouts and bad scouts. But, you said something that I thought was really interesting. You said, if you're going to make a mistake, make your own mistake. Don't make someone else's mistake. And I guess I'm curious if you could elaborate on how that has applied to you and how important of a statement that has been to what you do and how you go about it.
Yeah. Well, something I learned very quickly in this business is you have to have a thick skin because you're going to make mistakes. There's no way around it. And I find that's the best way I learn is through my mistakes. And so, it's kind of like, baseball being my first love, I I make a lot of analogies and comparisons, but you know, if a hitter goes up to the plate 10 times and he gets on base, you know, four or even five times out of that 10, he's doing a heck of a job. And he might have struck out five times, but you know, it's the batting average that matters. And so I'm extremely proud of my batting average, but there's several strikeouts in when you look at my full body of work. And but that's the most important part of being an evaluator is being able to self-evaluate and understand, okay, I missed on this guy and that's fine, but what I miss on? And is it sometimes as simple as understanding the most important traits at a position? Sometimes it's, you know, you maybe misunderstood what he was asked to do in college. Sometimes it's an injury maybe that you didn't know about. And sometimes I've found that I nailed the evaluation in terms of his strengths and his weaknesses, but looking at the situation he's in at the NFL level, maybe he's not being used correctly or, you know, used the way that at least I interpreted he should be used because of his strengths. And that happens all the time. So it's something that, you know, there's a lot of groupthink. There's a lot of, especially with social media now, there's a lot of voices out there when it comes to any subject, and NFL draft being one of them. And you know, so there's a lot of thoughts being put out there about who the best player is at this position and this and that, and it's easy to be swayed by other people's opinions, but you can't do that. You have to try and do it in a vacuum and trust your process, trust what you know, you believe in your eyes, and you know, whatever, you know, how you use analytics as part of it, how you use the tape, how you use just what you've heard from guys around the league, things like that. It's just, it's a very interesting process. And if I'm going to miss, I'd rather miss by something I did wrong and not just, you know, believing something that someone else put out there. So it's something that I've definitely adopted over the years, and something that is really important to my process.
And I think that's a valuable life lesson as well. Like I know there have been times in my life where I've had a decision and, you know, maybe my gut's telling me this, but then a few people whom I trust and respect, maybe they're suggesting that. And, you know, I guess it's gone both ways for me. Like I think of like a big career decision I made in which someone who at the time I really leaned on for support was advising against it, and I went with my gut, and it worked out really well. But like, I know there are plenty of times in which, you know, perhaps I have it, and then I almost feel so, I feel so much worse about it when I didn't go with my own feeling and instead did something that was not as natural to me or organic or, you know, whatever the case is. I just think that like that, I could 110% see how that applies to scouting. I also think it applies to life.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that stems from just being afraid to make a mistake. And that's something that I know I've struggled with, you know, being judged for my mistakes. And it's something that I've learned you have to try not to worry about it, because that's how you learn. That's how you grow. And, you know, it's, there's an old Frank Sinatra quote that says, you know, the big lesson in life is never be scared of anyone or anything. That's the big lesson. If you can adopt that and learn that, then, you know, you're going to feel like you can do anything. And it's not being worried about being judged for my mistakes is something that, once I was able to accept that, and I was really able to grow, because then, you know what, I'm going to make mistakes, and you have to accept that, and you own it, and you learn from it. And it's, I absolutely think you're right. It's not just in scouting or evaluation. It's true in life.
Dane, has a player or a player's family ever reached out to you to either thank you for your evaluation or harass you for your evaluation of their son or of themselves?
Oh, all the time. I mean, it more so the latter. You know, it's, you're not going to make everybody happy with your rankings, with how you feel on players. And, you know, I receive a lot of emails from parents, you know, on social media, from siblings, from friends. It's just, it's part of it. And, you know, it's tough. I have an internal struggle with it, because I'm sometimes I'm saying some not nice things about a player, and it's not personal, but I mean, it's hard if you're, you know, a family member of this person, it's hard not to take that personally when you're saying that he's maybe not good in this one area, or he can't do this, or, you know, he's had a long shot of making it at the next level. I mean, it's hard not to take things like that personally, and I'm not doing it to necessarily, you know, hurt anyone. It's just, it's part of my job. And so it's something I struggle with, because I don't want to be negative. I don't want to, like, this player has been working his entire life to achieve his dreams of making it all the way to the NFL and to, you know, make a career out of it. And here I am just destroying it with what I say. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, his career is over by any means. The NFL teams aren't drafting a player or not drafting a player based on what I say. So, you know, that's kind of what I remind. When I do respond to those messages, that's basically what I say. I say, listen, I'm not drafting for a team. I'm just giving my opinion. You know, all he has to do is keep doing what he's doing and care about what NFL teams are saying, and that's that. And sometimes, a lot of times, I'd say most times, family members are very understanding of that, and they say, no, you're right. I mean, it's, you know, and sometimes maybe not so much. Other times, you know, I do get questions from a lot of parents about, hey, should my son play in the Senior Bowl? Is he going to help himself that much? Is it worth it? Or should he leave or go back for a senior year? And I'll always give my honest opinion about that and say, you know, here, you should also talk to this person, this person, this person, but here's my opinion. This is what I would do. And, you know, good luck in your decision.
Has there ever been like one of those instances in which they were angry at you, and it's like any of them that have like turned into not lifelong relationships, but like long-standing relationships or friendships, either, you know, with a parent or the player, that like you turned a bad situation into something that materialized in that way?
Nothing that's gone from bad to good like that. I mean, I try to keep a distance from players, just because it's, you know, just like a general manager for a team, you know, it's okay to interact with players, but at the same time, you don't want to get too close, because it's a business. And so, it's hard to get to know these guys and then also keep personal bias out of it. A guy might just be a tremendous guy, and then when it comes to breaking down his tape, you're just kind of, you know, that'll creep into your thought process. So, honestly, I try to keep my distance from a lot of these guys. You know, a lot of them, I spend my falls, you know, talking to a lot of these guys on the phone, getting to know them, because that's such a big part of the evaluation part. The tape, it only tells you so much, you know, who the guy is as a person and everything like that. That's everything. And so I spend a lot of time on the phone with these guys throughout the fall and into the spring and the process, just to get to know them better. But, you know, it's something where I don't really look to take the conversation or the relationship further beyond that, just because I don't like it to affect maybe my process with that player and accurately evaluating him on, you know, when maybe I would let that relationship creep into my decisions.
All right. We have 1 minute. So some quick hitters here. Is when you talk to these players, you just mentioned those conversations, is there a question that you always love to ask and hear the response to?
Yeah, there's always a few. You know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? You know, who's the best player you've gone against? I think one of the most important questions is, what's the difference? Because most of these guys are seniors. What's the biggest difference between you as a freshman when you first got there and now as a senior? Just to understand their growth process, where they think they've grown the most. I think that's really important.
Biggest miss?
I mean, it has to be Pat Mahomes, because I gave him an early second round grade. I mean, when you watch him at Texas Tech, you know, he was playing backyard football. And so it was so hard to understand, what does he know? What does he not know? And, you know, obviously he's, you know, a generational quarterback and maybe one of the best players that we'll ever see play football. And so that, even though I liked him quite a bit and I was optimistic, that's a big miss by me.
Biggest hit?
Probably Antonio Brown. Loved him out of Central Michigan. Obviously, his career has taken a a turn for the weird. But, you know, he went in the sixth round, and I gave him a second round grade. I loved him. He was the caliber of athlete that he was. Thought he was going to be an impact player, and he had a pretty good career.
There you go. That's episode 68 of the Just a Sec Conversation with the great Dane Brugler of The Athletic, one of the foremost authorities in the NFL world when it comes to covering the draft. Special shout out to my man Zach Rowe for all his hard work in producing the Just a Sec podcast series. If you know me, you know that I had zero to do with the music and getting all this stuff lined up. I barely could tie my own shoes. So thanks to Zach for all of his help. Thanks to you for tuning in. Again, feel free to share this link with any friends or family or whomever. Just click the subscribe button to check out all the other content pieces and support the channel. It really does go a long way in helping to support this specific project. Until next time, stay safe, be healthy. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.